Neither snow nor rain, the line keeps growing. Cold conditions in a COVID hotspot. People waiting for hours just for a shot at the vaccine.
And that feeling of anticipation is also setting in for thousands of others across this province. The government's plan for paid sick leave still under wraps. Good evening. Ontarians are being told to expect details imminently.
It's an issue many have suggested is driving the spread of the virus as the premier himself is forced to stay at home. We begin our coverage with CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief, Colin DeMello. Colin.
Michelle, it was late last night that we learned about a positive case inside the premier's office. The premier himself is now isolating, and he's working to craft a new sick day program in Ontario as the premier works from home for the first time during this pandemic. As COVID-19 continues to ravage Ontario's intensive care units, the virus has crept into Queen's Park. An unidentified member of Premier Doug Ford's staff contracted COVID-19, forcing the premier into isolation even after testing negative. While the premier remains at home, some are pointing out that he'll be paid during his absence from the Ontario legislature.
I hope the premier uses this time to reflect on our privilege and to extend that same privilege to essential workers who have to go into high-risk workplaces.
Healthcare advocates say the need for paid sick leave is critical as more essential workers end up in the ICU.
It's the ethical thing to do, and it'll also end this pandemic faster. It's as simple as that.
After repeatedly rejecting scientific calls for paid sick leave, the Ford government says it is now working on a program to shore up the federal government's sickness recovery benefit, which critics argue is inadequate.
It is imminent. Obviously, it's important for us that we get this out as soon as possible. We're going to get it right, and over the next number of days, you'll see us come forward with something.
The suite of provincial measures could expand the list of eligibility, could make it more efficient to get the money and paid time off so that frontline workers can get a COVID-19 vaccine. Critics want to ensure the program is easy to access.
A plan that's easy for workers to take advantage of, that's easy to implement, and that includes, no barriers. So, for example, no doctor's notes.
The sudden about-face is the latest in a string of policy reversals. The government was forced to reopen playgrounds after backlash from parents and was forced to rescind new policing powers that were deemed to be unconstitutional.
Minister, do you feel like your government owes the people of Ontario an apology?
What I would like to reinforce is that the people of Ontario continue to do what they know is best, and that is limit your mobility.
But the damage, some argue, is already done. The isolated premier has been losing support in public opinion polls. Asked if Ford still has the support of his own government.
The premier has done a spectacular job throughout this.
Even as the government scrambles to implement measures that doctors say was needed months ago. The premier has not been seen publicly since that disastrous news conference last Friday. Because Ontario is still under a state of emergency, the premier is legally obligated to hold regular reports to the public about the state of the pandemic. It's just unclear when the premier is expected to hold that update. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
All right. Thank you, Colin. 4,212 people have tested positive over the last day across Ontario. That means more than 429,000 infections have been confirmed since the start of the pandemic. 32 more deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 7,789. And more than 378,000 illnesses are considered resolved.
1,249 infections are added in Toronto, with 771 in Peel Region. There are 386 new cases in York Region, 276 in Hamilton, and 214 in Durham Region. Just over 200 tests came back positive in Niagara Region and 168 in Halton. Turning to the vaccination effort, and the demand is clear. More long lines today at pop-up clinics in hot spots.
As residents wait for hours, it begs the question, are these areas getting the resources they need? CTV's Saran Fennell is live with more. Saran.
Hi, Nathan. Well, some of the crowds that you saw at Downsview is not what we've been seeing here at the Metro Toronto Convention Centre. No lineups today as everything is run off of appointments only. But over at the Driftwood Community Centre, a different story. People there started lining up at 4 this morning.
This was the scene outside of the Driftwood Community Centre near Jane and Finch.
Like around the 1 hour mark, it was pretty cold.
Well, it was windy. It was snowing a bit.
Hundreds of people lining up for hours at the pop-up vaccination clinic to get a shot of Pfizer. It runs on a first-come, first-served basis.
It is nonstop. Honestly, it's a continuous round of me saying the same thing over and over again, but people are so happy.
The pop-up has been open for 3 days and serves people 18 and over in certain hotspot postal codes.
We've done 2,340 vaccines on Monday and Tuesday, and we plan to do that again today.
This is the result of the fact that each pop-up clinic serves a unique and specific group of people.
There are 9 city-run mass vaccination sites in Toronto, including the Metro Toronto Convention Centre, where there was no line this afternoon.
Too far. Downtown's too far.
Having to go through public transport like the TTC or the subway makes it, I think, increase the risk of getting infected by COVID-19.
You know, the idea that if you build it and people will come will work for some, but not for the people who desperately need the vaccine.
But in some of the city's hardest hit areas, there are no mass vaccination sites, so eligible people either wait in line at a pop-up, or if you're 40 and up, book through a pharmacy where time slots are possibly full. This man chose to wait in line.
I heard that it's Pfizer, so I prefer to come here for the Pfizer rather than get the AstraZeneca.
The city acknowledging the high demand, saying it plans on tripling vaccine access to 13 hard-hit neighborhoods as soon as there's supply.
So it's good that we got here and we got a ticket. We're in line. I'm just grateful for that.
The city says it plans on boosting access through mobile and pop-up clinics. Now, I called a number of pharmacies in Toronto's Northwest End. One tells me they had a wait list of 195 people. So people over 40 years old in that Driftwood line tell me they wanted to book online, but the system for them was just too confusing. Reporting live near Front Street, I'm Siron Fennell. Nathan, over to you.
Right. Thank you, Siron. A record number of vaccines were administered province-wide yesterday, more than 136,000. More than 4.1 million shots are now in arm since the beginning of Ontario's rollout, and more than 349,000 people are considered vaccinated after receiving both required doses. Meanwhile, for 97-year-old Tom Fitzpatrick, this was the moment he's been waiting for, and he's been waiting a long time.
The homebound senior finally getting his first dose of the vaccine. His story highlighting the struggles for thousands of others. CTV's Austin Delaney reports.
A paramedic arrived this morning armed with a vaccine to the home of 97-year-old Tom Fitzpatrick, who finally got his jab today. Homebound, his family worried he was in danger of contracting the deadly coronavirus from a PSW.
We're so relieved that he's finally got his vaccine.
We first met Tom Fitzpatrick a week ago, one of about 5,000 homebound seniors patiently waiting for a vaccine.
One of the things we feared the most was that last year, caregivers going from one congregate setting to another, that's how it passed. And that's what we feared here. Mm-hmm. And finally, he has it, but it's not over. There's still over 5,000 patients that are in the same situation.
Toronto paramedics are administering between 150 and 175 vaccines to individuals at home each week.
I've calculated that that's going to take until late October, mid-November before they're all vaccinated. And I think that's just terrible planning in the midst of all these dangerous variants and the risk of hospitalizations of these very vulnerable seniors at a time that our hospitals are already in crisis.
Toronto's medical officer of health says the situation should get better as more vaccine supply becomes available.
That frees up some of our mobile capacity in a greater way so that we can get to those who are truly homebound and would have extreme challenge, if not outright impossibility, to get to clinics outside. As we're able to redeploy resources, we should be able to get there faster.
The mayor says it is also a logistical issue.
Each of the calls to homebound people takes a lot longer because you're dealing with only one person, and a full crew of people, as it were, have to go and deal with that. And that's not a complaint. It's just a statement of fact.
The Fitzpatrick family argues these vulnerable seniors should be prioritized for the vaccines, adding there are many doctors and nurses volunteering to administer the shots. Austin Delaney, CTV News.
Also tonight, new details for pregnant women looking to get the vaccine, along with some new confusion over what's required to get the shot. Toronto police are announcing a change in how they'll enforce the province's COVID-19 stay-at-home order.
Dedicated police teams are being launched to tamp down on illegal gatherings whenever they're reported across the city. Police say the teams of officers will mainly focus on large gatherings, both indoors and outdoors. One team will be based out of each police division, but they'll have one central command so they can be deployed in other areas. Police have stressed they will not conduct random stops of people or cars. But police may now ask people to identify themselves if there's reason to suspect they're taking part in an illegal gathering.
Next, to the effort to close workplaces dealing with outbreaks, CTV's John Musselman is live in Brampton with what we're learning about the plans in both Peel and Toronto. John.
Well, Michelle, we know that workplace transmission has been a huge issue here in Peel. We're already hearing from the Peel Medical Officer of Health and the Mayor of Mississauga that there could be some shutdowns coming as early as Friday. The test positivity rate in Brampton has exceeded 22%, a record 200 COVID positive cases at Brampton Civic Hospital. These numbers are a key factor behind the Section 22 order. Businesses will be shut down in Peel and in Toronto if more than five people become infected.
The fact of the matter is that with community levels of transmission where they are right now, as high as they are right now, any interaction with anybody outside of your immediate household represents a risk.
We have long known that workplaces are driving the spread of the virus. Since the onset of the pandemic, Peel Region has seen 402 workplace outbreaks.
There was a chart that was put out last week by the Ontario Science Table that showed how many lives you can save. I mean, how many cases you can prevent based on a vaccine in a hotspot and a vaccine in a non-hotspot. And if you want to save as many lives as possible, you want to limit the spread. Focus on the hotspots.
There will be workplace exemptions in both regions. In Toronto, exemptions include healthcare facilities, schools, childcare centers, and workplaces providing critical services. In Peel Region, that list includes schools, pharmacies, healthcare, shelters, emergency services, and critical infrastructure services, including telecommunications, transportation, and energy. Mississauga Mayor Bonnie Crombie and health officials in Peel acknowledge that 10-day shutdowns will have a negative impact on employers and employees, but they say at this point they have no other choice.
We have a number of workplace investigations that are currently active. There are more workplaces that are having outbreaks that are detected every single day.
Dr. Lawrence Lowe says the Section 22 order is the most effective way to stop the spread in these workplaces. And health officials aren't naming any specific businesses or locations yet. That information will be made available once they enact what will happen at these workplaces. Reporting live in Brampton, I'm John Musselman. I'll send it back to you.
All right, thank you, John. Late April looked more like December this morning as the GTA was covered in a light blanket of snow overnight. The snow didn't stick around long, though, as warmer temperatures made quick work of the white stuff by the early afternoon. Lindsay Morrison is here with a look at the current conditions. Is that it for the snow, or can we expect another blast?
Well, that's it for now, Nathan. I can't make any promises long-term just yet, but we can talk about what happened. And we had significant snow here in the GTA between 4 and 7 centimeters, but the Niagara Escarpment picking up more than 20 centimeters of snow. That low has departed. We're still seeing a couple of snow pellets to our west, but nothing accumulating at this point. Winds are brisk. They're coming out of the northwest right now. That's keeping temperatures cool below freezing in some areas, and it's looking like a cold one tonight here in the city of Toronto. We'll talk about when there's a warm-up in store coming up. For now, Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Still ahead, the impact of the Derek Chauvin verdict being felt around the world. How his conviction in the death of George Floyd is renewing calls for change. Plus, the work being done right here in the GTA.
His family says he just disappeared. Carol Jankowski hasn't been seen or heard from in more than 2 weeks.
Tonight, a plea from his wife, desperate for information about her husband and primary caregiver. CTV's Janice Golding reports.
For the last 15 days, Amy Jankowski has walked her dog alone. Normally, it's something she does with her husband, but Carol Jankowski has been missing since April the 6th.
He just disappeared.
Amy says she's been with her husband for 19 years and married nearly 12. And not only is he her best friend, but he's also her primary caregiver. Amy Jankowski lives with cerebral palsy.
He's a loving husband. He takes care of me.
On April the 6th, Carol Jankowski went to work as usual at 7 a.m. He normally returns home around 3:30 p.m.
He texted me at 3:30 on Tuesday, and he said he would see me shortly, like he was just around the corner and never came home.
Amy says in the lead up to his disappearance, no one in their immediate circle noticed any unusual behavior on Carol's part. And for her husband to just vanish is completely uncharacteristic.
He would never not show up for me.
Banking records show Carol Jankowski was at the Stockyards Home Depot at Keele and St. Clair, just 5 minutes from home, around 3:15 p.m. Tuesday, April the 6th. But the 39-year-old has not been seen since. Carol Jankowski is described as 6 feet tall, 190 pounds, clean-shaven with short blonde hair. He was last seen wearing a blue shirt and blue jeans. He was also driving a blue 2007 Dodge Caravan, license plate CCNH573, with a stick figure family decal on the back window. Family and friends, along with Toronto police, had been looking for him since, but with no success.
Everyone who knows him loves him, and everyone who knows him wants him to come home, and nothing, if he's in trouble, nothing is so bad that we can't fix it.
Investigators say they're concerned about his safety, but they've had no lead so far. So if you have seen Jankowski or his vehicle over the last 2 weeks, you're asked to contact Toronto Police or Crime Stoppers if you want to remain anonymous. Janice Golding, CTV News.
The sentencing hearing for a man convicted of killing two women over a span of nearly 10 years was adjourned today because of COVID-19 safety concerns. Adam Strong was found guilty last month of first-degree murder in the death of 18-year-old Rory Hache, as well as manslaughter in the death of 19-year-old Candace Fitzpatrick. Hache disappeared in 2017, while Fitzpatrick was last seen back in 2008. Hache's remains were found in Strong's Oshawa apartment, while Fitzpatrick's DNA was found on a knife in Strong's basement. His sentencing is expected to resume on May 10th. Reaction to Derek Chauvin being found guilty in the murder of George Floyd continues to pour in.
People in both the U.S. and Canada hoping the verdict serves as a catalyst for change as Chauvin awaits his sentence. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us live in studio with more. Raheem.
Well, Nathan and Michelle, Derek Chauvin is being held inside a maximum security prison in isolation away from other inmates for fear of his safety. Meanwhile, there's a sense of optimism on both sides of the border. You can hear the passion in their voice as people watched on their phones Derek Chauvin being convicted of murder in the killing of George Floyd. Fireworks lit up the night sky in Minneapolis.
You can't stop the revolution!
The streets of Atlanta taken over.
You got it, baby!
And relief in Floyd's hometown of Houston. A moment of comfort after years of pain.
I'm gonna put up a fight every day. Because I'm not just fighting for George anymore, I'm fighting for everybody around this world.
That fight includes Chantel Krupka, a black woman from Mississauga who was shot in the abdomen last May by a white female police officer who has since resigned and faces charges.
Just to think how many other lives have been turned upside down like this and nobody even knows their names or their stories, that's kind of, it's gut-wrenching.
Chauvin, now a convicted killer, has a violent past. Nearly two dozen complaints have been filed against him, and he was part of three officer-involved shootings.
We have to get policing in the position of protecting people as opposed to walking into every situation, guns drawn.
Calls for police to be held accountable are starting to be heard. The Attorney General opening a sweeping investigation into policing practices in Minneapolis. Change, many believe, is also needed in Canada. But others believe the force needs to be defunded, calling on politicians to mandate new rules.
You know, actually, it won't be police who are going to be the folks who are going to respond first when there's a mental health crisis. And actually, we are going to decriminalize more drugs to make sure that more people aren't in the line of fire of police.
Reform to protect the communities they serve. Now, the state of Minnesota has sentencing guidelines, and many legal experts say based on that, Chauvin could face around 12 and a half years in prison. But the prosecution has already said it will argue for a stiffer sentence, and the judge will deliver his decision in June.
Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Nathan, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. An update tonight on calls for the province to prioritize pregnant women for vaccination against COVID-19 amid a sudden spike in severe symptoms among pregnant women in this third wave.
The Ministry of Health says it is reviewing its eligibility criteria to make clear whether pregnant women qualify for the vaccine now. CTV's Natalie Johnson reports.
Got my prescription.
Natalie Dash is 26 weeks pregnant and this morning got a note from her obstetrician recommending she get the COVID-19 vaccine.
The Minister of Health herself has said that if a woman's primary physician believes it's important to immunize quickly, then of course that they would follow advice.
And of course we would follow the physician's advice.
But even with the note from her doctor, when she called the provincial vaccine booking line, Dash was told she is not yet eligible for the vaccine.
It seems there was a bit of a disconnect between the government's policy and what's being implemented on the ground.
The call from doctors for the province to immediately prioritize pregnant women for vaccination comes amid a sudden spike in very severe COVID-19 symptoms in pregnant women who are requiring life-saving critical care.
The modifications that happen naturally to the immune system of a pregnant woman are certainly very complex and paralleled with an infection that also has very complicated implications on the immune system. That overlap is probably why we're seeing severe illness in those that do get infected.
The Ministry of Health told CTV News in a statement, the ministry understands that vaccination with a doctor's prescription is a current practice. We are consulting with our clinical advisory subgroup about formally amending the guidelines for pregnant women to receive vaccinations so that there will be no future confusion.
Pregnant people have essential jobs. Pregnant people are living with people with essential jobs, and they have children that are going to school and daycare. So they're not able always to stay home and isolate.
I've been having like major anxiety over COVID since getting pregnant.
Natalie Abioff is 18 weeks pregnant and was able to schedule a vaccination appointment through her Halton Public Health Unit with a midwife's note.
We'll find out then if they'll accept the note, but from what I'm reading on Twitter, I'm seeing a lot of pregnant women who still are being turned away.
Hoping that she can in fact get the shot to protect herself, her family, and her baby. Natalie Johnson, CTV News.
The United States has now administered 200 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine, and soon it may be sending some our way.
I've talked to our neighbors. A fellow who's working really hard to take care of his country and deal with this, I was on the phone with for about half an hour today, and the Prime Minister of Canada, we helped a little bit there. We're going to try to help some more.
U.S. President Joe Biden says they don't have enough vaccines right now to send any abroad, but the White House is looking at what to do with vaccines that aren't currently in use in America. The AstraZeneca shot has not been approved there yet. The U.S. has already loaned our country 1.5 million doses.
On her 95th birthday, the Queen expressed gratitude today for the outpouring of support following the death of Prince Philip. Her Majesty released a statement that reads in part, "My family and I would like to thank you all for the support and kindness shown to us in recent days. We have been deeply touched and continue to be reminded that Philip had such an extraordinary impact on countless people throughout his life." The monarch marked her birthday quietly at Windsor Castle. In London, Air Force Air Cadets paid tribute to the Prince during a visit by the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge.
Hip hip
hooray!
Hip hip
hooray!
Hip hip
hooray!
This was the first official engagement for Will and Kate since the Duke of Edinburgh's funeral on Saturday. During their visit, the Duchess was given an opportunity to pilot a flight simulator. The couple also watched the cadets perform training exercises.
Still ahead, remembering a legendary goal in the storied history of the Toronto Maple Leafs, plus the life and death of the man who secured that Stanley Cup win.
I'm Pat Foran. Coming up on Consumer Alert, the real estate market has been red hot this year, and that means some landlords are looking to sell their rental properties. That's causing problems for tenants who say they're being told to get out, and some say they have nowhere to go. I'll have my report just ahead.
We love getting to share your weather photos on a snowy April day like this. Debbie in Oakville says, maybe no swimming today, eh? Diane captured a neat photo in Markham as well. Those are her bonsai trees with a fresh blanket of snow. And while a late April blast of winter isn't for everyone, Jackson Milton says her puppy, Muttley, got to enjoy snow for the first time. Very sweet. Thank you to everyone who connected with us on social media. Tonight, it's less about the snow and more about the cold. We're talking wind chills, maybe record lows in some areas. And this will be a tough night for farmers, gardeners, and growers. But don't worry. worry, spring returns on Friday. Stay with us. CTV News will be back in 2 minutes with your weather forecast. It's an effort to provide support for the victims of crime who sometimes feel among the most helpless.
Focusing on intimate partner violence, hoping to save lives. CTV's Beth McDonnell reports.
I sorted out the artwork and Paul had them printed.
Darian Henderson Bellman's memory is all around her grandparents, on their masks, in the garden, the garage roof. Life forever changed.
Very, very empty. We're only just realizing we're without her. We're just coming to grips with that now.
The 25-year-old was shot and killed in July last year. She had been involved with a Brampton man, now 28, facing first-degree murder.
There'd be excuses towards things that happened, I believe. But it's easy to look back on things and see what you didn't see before, right?
Peel Regional Police say in 2020, it received close to 20,000 reports of intimate partner violence. To put that into perspective, that's 50 a day, 2 an hour in Peel. About 40% of homicides related to this type of violence. To support victims and reduce violence, the force has created an intimate partner violence unit. It's made up of 48 officers with specialized training, some survivors working closely with community service providers, part of the mandate to follow up on the court process.
They aren't just going to be responding to incidents. They will also handle incidents of breach of recog, failure to comply, those types of areas that we know pose risk to survivors.
Mississauga's Sakina Holmes says when the pandemic hit, calls for help skyrocketed 700%. With her husband home more, this client was too scared to call police.
He called me names and he pushed me down through the stairs and I had no place to go.
The new unit, a good step, but advocates say more is needed.
You finally gather the courage to call the police. We need to have crisis counselors and therapists who are going out to these calls, who understand the situation a little bit better.
Police say Darian's death contributed to the momentum change with the new unit.
And why wait till a young woman's death to make it happen? We're grateful something's happening.
Just one girl is saved from something we do or what Darian did. She didn't die in vain.
The unit's goal, to end homicides from intimate partner violence. Beth McDonnell, CTV News.
And you can visit our website for more details on this story and information about another domestic homicide that wasn't originally publicly reported by Toronto Police. You can find that at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
As we all know, real estate prices have been hitting all-time highs, and that means some landlords have decided to cash in and sell their properties.
And that's causing problems for some tenants who say they're being told to leave with little notice. If you're a tenant, what are your rights? Pat Foran joins us now with Consumer Alert. Pat.
Thanks, Nathan and Michelle. An Oshawa woman was shocked when she was told she had to leave because the landlord wanted to renovate and sell the home she was living in. She says trying to find another place to live has been difficult and rental prices are going up.
Right now, I have no idea where we're going to go. It's just hopeless.
April Santala has been renting a house in Oshawa for the past 4 years with her two children. Real estate prices in Durham region have been surging like the rest of the GTA. Her landlord asked her to move out in 60 days so he could sell the property. Then she was told to leave in 30. She joined a Facebook group and found out it's happening to others too.
I discovered that there's just so many people. Everyone's just being kicked out long term, 13 years, 15 years at a place, and their landlords are kicking everybody out.
Santala said everywhere she looks, rents are much higher than what she's paying now.
I'm looking at paying $1,000 more a month for a floor of a house.
She found there is a lot of competition for rental properties that are available, and some landlords want the rent paid a year in advance.
And a lot of landlords are trying to push people out like this.
Tenants advocate Jordy Dent says landlords just can't tell someone to move out on short notice.
It's totally illegal. A landlord can't actually evict you because they want to sell. They can only evict you because they've actually sold the unit and the person who buys it wants to move in.
Dent says evictions are also on hold in Ontario because of the pandemic.
If someone's adamant that they're not moving out until the sheriff comes, the landlord's not going to be able to get them out until the eviction order is lifted.
That was good news for Santala, but she knows eventually she'll have to find another place to stay.
And rent increases have been put on hold for all of 2021. A landlord may be able to raise rents slightly if they've made capital improvements, but for the majority of renters, there should be zero increases this year. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Well, by midday, at least in Toronto, you might have forgotten about all the snow you had to brush off the vehicle earlier today, but still the threat of flurries, and it's cold.
Yeah, things did quickly clear up. Lindsay.
Yeah, but we had a real nice fluffy blanket of wet snow in most parts of the GTA this morning. Not everyone, the north end of the GTA, not waking up to quite as much as those further south and closer to the shores of Lake Ontario. It caused a little bit of a scene, but yes, it's going to be a distant memory by the time we approach the weekend. Weather is brought to you by Train. For home comfort, cooling, and clean air, it's hard to stop a train. Let's start with the current satellite and radar. A few flurries flying downtown Toronto and a couple of snow pellets in western sections of southwestern Ontario. Nothing accumulating here. We'll take a big picture look at where that low that brought us all the snow is now. It's sliding across Quebec and into northern portions of New Brunswick. We will say goodbye to that one. And it will be a drier day, generally speaking. Tomorrow, we have a chance of a few flurries early in the morning, thanks in part to a little bit of lake effect snow. Breezy winds coming out of the northwest, not only keeping our temperature cool through the overnight hours tonight, but maybe triggering a little more in the way of light snow that could make for some slippery sidewalks or roads. But other than that, we're not looking at anything as far as accumulating snow. And Friday is looking not only clear, but also quite comfortable temperature-wise. Then we see a few showers starting to approach as we make our way into Saturday. Today, we only made it to a high of 3 degrees. That is well below our seasonal average of 14, but even at 3 degrees, that was enough to melt that snow today. 6 will be our forecast daytime high for tomorrow. That's a little bit of an improvement, and we're expecting some sun as well, but there's Friday, 15 degrees, mainly sunny skies. Saturday at this point looks a little bit unsettled. Sunday, not too bad. 30% chance of maybe a passing shower. Early part of next week looks dry, and it looks like we're going to warm up by the middle part of next week once again. That's your look at the weather. Nathan, I'll send it over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Also tonight, making magic on and off screen and being recognized by the Academy. The Canadian up for an Oscar and the story behind his recent success.
They follow the recommended precautions, but still got COVID-19.
Cases like that are adding to a growing confidence that aerosols are the dominant mode of transmission. CTV's Avis Favreau reports.
Doctors say they're seeing more cases of patients very sick with COVID who have no idea how they got infected. People who say they largely stayed at home, wore masks, and physically distanced, but took a short trip to the pharmacy or in an elevator.
One person told me, and I didn't take off my mask, so how did I get this?
Other people that you ask will say they only really took one trip. I remember one case just last week where they said they really only went to a small grocery store. They didn't really do much else.
The continuing rapid spread, say some scientists, shows the virus is primarily infecting people through the air, with three scientific publications making the point.
We found, without any doubt, there was strong evidence that not only does it travel in the air, but that the airborne route of transmission is dominant.
Researchers liken the aerosol spread to secondhand smoke, which hangs in the air.
The transmission of COVID-19 by aerosols is gaining importance, and there's mounting scientific evidence that it's happening.
Scientists say if that's the case, public health measures should be modified, with less focus on cleaning and more attention to ventilation in buildings and elevators, and also in promoting better, more fitted masks that control aerosol spread. But there are no signs the World Health Organization is going to change its guidance, leaving this important discussion hanging in the air. Avis Favreau, CTV News, Toronto.
Netflix is increasing its content budget as it reports a slowdown in the rate of new subscriptions. The streaming service added about 4 million members worldwide in the first quarter. That's millions fewer than expected and much smaller than the gains seen earlier in the pandemic. The company plans to spend over $21 billion on content this year. That's compared to around $17 billion in 2019 and $15 billion last year.
As a teenager, Ben Proudfoot traveled from his home in Halifax to Los Angeles to study magic.
But now it's his filmmaking that's casting a spell. The documentary filmmaker nominated for an Academy Award. CTV's Andrea Case reports.
When former magician and now documentary filmmaker Ben Proudfoot heard his friend Chris Bowers was writing a concerto, he thought it might make a good documentary.
And Chris was, and is, still, really struggling with the idea of being a black composer in Hollywood and the imposter syndrome and everything that comes with that. And, you know, wanted to talk about that.
But after meeting the inspiration for that piece of music, Bowers' 91-year-old grandfather, Proudfoot knew he had a great story.
Chris and I locked eyes and we sort of came up with that concept of both telling the story of the concerto, but also telling the story of Chris's family's journey from, you know, slavery to the Walt Disney Concert Hall and making this a real dedication to his grandfather.
Composer Bowers wrote the score for 2019 Best Picture Oscar winner Green Book. And this film, Concerto is a Conversation, is produced by Academy Award nominee Ava DuVernay.
She's just like a marvel on every count. And so to be able to work with her and that she has put her name and imprimatur behind this film has been unbelievable, a huge like honor of a lifetime.
Proudfoot was visiting his mother in Halifax when he found out Concerto is a Conversation received an Oscar nomination for short subject documentary.
We kind of lost it and screamed and danced around, and my mom had tucked away flowers and champagne in the garage. So she ran out there and brought them in. It was a very memorable and wonderful moment.
Now the former magician is hoping Oscar night will be magical. Andrea Case, CTV News.
The 93rd Academy Awards will be broadcast this Sunday at 8 p.m. right here on CTV. CTV is a division of Bell Media.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
After the break, the CFL is facing another delay, but still determined to hit the field. What football fans need to know about a revised plan and when teams are hoping to kick off a shortened season.
I hope the Premier uses this time to reflect on our privilege and to extend that same privilege to essential workers who have to go into high-risk workplaces.
Updating our top stories, the province says it's working on a program which could include paid sick days for workers. It comes as the premier self-isolates after a staff member tested positive for COVID-19. Doug Ford has tested negative.
You know, the idea that if you build it and people will come will work for some, but not for the people who desperately need the vaccine.
Health experts are expressing concerns about vaccine accessibility as hundreds line up for hours in North York today. pop-up clinics are serving the community, despite Toronto having 9 immunization sites.
He would never not show up for me.
Amy Jankowski, who lives with cerebral palsy, is searching for her husband and primary caregiver, Carol. He vanished on April 6th and has not been seen since. Police are asking anyone with information to get in touch.
Don't forget to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know.
Ontarians are still waiting for details when it comes to paid sick days.
We're getting a better sense of how people are feeling about the idea. And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by co-anchors Nick Dixon and Jackie Crandles. Nick, you'll be getting the results of a new poll.
That's right, Nathan. You know, as the premier is at home self-isolating right now, he may want to be listening to this as he's pondering, apparently, paid sick days. We've got a pollster coming in with some interesting numbers on Ontarians' opinions about the idea of paid sick days, plus a panel of labor experts and business all talking about what they need to see to make this program work. That's coming up on CP24 tonight.
And Jackie, you'll also be talking to the president of a large company that's launching a campaign to combat vaccine hesitancy.
Yeah, that's right. Labatt Breweries are going to give their employees paid time off to get the shot. They also want to bring vaccines to their employees on site. And today they're actually launching a campaign to help combat vaccine hesitancy, to help fully inform their employees. We'll be speaking with the president of Labatt Breweries about that. They want to get other employers on board as well.
All right. Thank you, Jackie and Nick. CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar gained to close at 80.04 U.S. American benchmark oil slid $1.32 a barrel to close at 61.35. And the TSX Composite Index gained 102 points to close at 19,143.
The Bank of Canada held interest rates at their historically low levels today, but an increase could be on the horizon. The central bank signaled Canada's economy is bouncing back from the pandemic faster than expected. It's now scaling back federal government bond purchases, and inflation rates are projected to hit the bank's target by the second half of next year. Bank of Canada Governor Tiff Macklem said any decision on an interest rate hike will wait until the economic recovery is complete.
In sports, the CFL is delaying the start of its season due to the pandemic.
What I saw and what I have seen amongst our teams is a real willingness to be creative, because in the end, we want to have a football season in 2021.
The league intends to kick off the season on August 5th, nearly 2 months later than originally planned. The season is being trimmed to 14 games from the regular 18. The 2020 season was canceled because of the pandemic.
COVID-19's canceled the Women's World Hockey Championship in Nova Scotia for a second time. Health officials told Hockey Canada and the International Ice Hockey Federation the 10-country tournament could not go ahead as planned because of the safety risks associated with the pandemic. The IIHF president says he was very disappointed by the decision, which comes just over 2 weeks before the tournament was set to begin.
The European Super League has collapsed after 8 of the 12 founding teams abandoned the project.
I want to apologize to all the fans, supporters of Liverpool Football Club for the disruption I caused over the past 48 hours. It goes without saying, but should be said, that the project put forward was never going to stand without the support of the fans.
Liverpool FC owner John Henry apologized for the move to form the Breakaway League. The project sparked outrage as it appeared designed to make the world's richest soccer teams even richer. Prince William, who is president of the English Football Association, tweeted, "I'm glad the united voice of football fans has been heard and listened to. It is now really important that we use this moment to secure the future health of the game at all levels. As president of the FA, I'm committed to playing my part in that work."
Just ahead, an overtime win to remember 70 years later and the unbelievable story behind the player who made it happen.
Tonight, counting COVID infections from international travel.
We need to look at that data very carefully.
Measuring the threat here as the virus rages overseas. That's later on CTV National News. Join us.
coming up on CP24 tonight. Home for a rest as critics call for paid sick leave. How would it work in Ontario? And busting myths. How Labatt's new program tackles vaccine hesitancy. A closer look at today's top stories tonight at 7 on CP24.
Finally tonight, a story enshrined in hockey lore 70 years later.
The life and death of Bill Barilko becoming the stuff of legend, inspiring marvel, mystery, and music. CTV's Sean Lethong reports.
An image that is iconic. Bill Barilko scoring in overtime to win the Stanley Cup for the Toronto Maple Leafs 70 years ago today, April 21st, 1951. Just a few months before the hero would die tragically in a plane crash. The story has become the thing of Leafs legend, even inspiring the song 50 Mission Cap by the Tragically Hip.
To me, it's a story that should be told for generations to come.
Leaf fan Mark Farah has dedicated much of his life to collecting.
Every jersey in here is game worn.
His basement covered in artifacts from Leafs past and present, but the story of Bill Barilko has become his obsession, comparing this to a Shakespearean tragedy.
A young hockey player winning 4 Stanley Cups in 5 years, carried off the ice, you know, your heroic biggest moment in sports history, and he's gone just a few months later.
In his collection, Farah actually has Barilko's Stanley Cup ring, the puck that scored the winning goal, and actual wreckage from the plane Barilko was inside when it crashed 100 kilometers north of Cochrane, Ontario in August 1951.
And that was the side of the plane that he was in.
Barilko's plane was not discovered for 11 years after the crash. The Leafs did not win another Stanley Cup until that same year, 1962, a fact detailed in handwritten song lyrics from Gord Downie that are on display next to the plane wreckage, something Farah says is important to tell.
As stories get older, they die. And this is traditionally our Canadian Buddy Holly story.
Keeping the legend alive. Sean Lethong, CTV News.
Take note, it's a cool night, particularly with that wind chill.
And I was saying, though, it's good for sleeping. Good sleeping weather.
It will be, but you might not be sleeping if you're worried about the garden or maybe your crops if you're a farmer. Here's the thing. We have sunshine currently in parts of York region and Durham region, but don't let that fool you this evening either, because you'll want the winter jacket still if you're heading out for a walk. Overnight tonight, we drop to a low of about -3 degrees. The record low for April 22nd is -4.7, so we could come close. There's one more look at your 7-day forecast. A little unsettled for Saturday, but the rest of the long range is looking pretty good. That's the weather. Michelle and Nathan, back to you.
Thank you, Lindsay, and be sure to join Zoraida Allman later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
In the meantime, you can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight with Nick Dixon and Jackie Crandles begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.